Let's see. I'm trying to think of the best way to look at the questions that came in, Feely.
I just have them on my phone.
Why is everything now on my computer in German? I do not understand.
Did you get that? I'm so
confused. Also, ich verstehe nur Bahnhof.
You only understand train station? It's all Greek to me.
Understanding train station. Living between cultures with Josh and Feely.
Welcome back to a new episode.
As always, we always start at the same time. Welcome back, everyone.
It's been 2 weeks, and yet again, we're recording kind of last minute for this week. But I was actually very surprised. People really liked our Super Bowl episode, and everyone was really impressed with how much we knew, or especially you knew, about football, or like you could share about the sport with everyone. So
yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes back to say that if you grow up with it, you have to be able to, I mean, you're just surrounded by it, so you're going to pick up bits and pieces. But as I said then, I'm not an expert and I don't want to be an expert, but yeah. I'm glad that people were at least able to learn something from the information that we shared. And I learned something as well from the whole experience, because I did stay up until 4 a.m.
Oh, did you?
For the Bengals to lose it in the last 2 minutes.
I know.
And it's very important to take the day off of work the day following day, because I was so dead. I was dead for the whole week. I felt like I was playing catch up all week. And next year, if the Bengals make it again and I stay up until 4, then I definitely would be taking off that Monday to get some more rest.
You should. Did you watch it on the German TV channel, or did you try and stream it? Okay, American.
No, it was actually really cool. There was an NFL app, I guess, that was NFL International or something. I forget exactly what it was called, but it was only €1. So I just paid €1 to be able to watch it, and then got the US commentary and everything.
Cool.
So it was fun. I really enjoyed it. You got like US commercials. I felt like I was back home.
Yeah, nice. Because like all the Germans that watch it on ProSieben, I mean, it's good for them that they get the German commentary and all the explanations that they need to understand what's happening, but they don't get the American commercials. So like my dad was actually watching it. He stayed up. I think he wasn't planning on staying up, but then the game was so close the whole time that he was like, damn, now I need to know how it ends. And he ended up staying up, and he was like, well, unfortunately, just regular German ads, which are like
that stinks.
Pretty boring compared to the cool Super Bowl ads. I like the halftime show too, but honestly, like I was so invested in it, which like is not normal for me, but because they were doing so well and it looked like they were about to win, I even was frustrated in the end. Like the last part where like it wasn't quite sure if they could maybe turn around again, my heart was beating really fast. I was like, wow, this is what it feels like being interested in sports. Cool.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been that invested in a football game either, and really following each play. I think I actually like paid attention to every single play throughout the entire game, which was definitely a first for me. But
yeah, I mean, I didn't really do that because I couldn't really follow that well. But I mean, I've had that feeling before, because obviously like soccer World Cups, and we actually did become the what do you say, the Weltmeister, the world champion?
World champion, yeah.
Yeah. So in those moments, of course, I've had that feeling, but just like I've never had it outside of a soccer World Cup before. So that was cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think everyone who's watching on YouTube already knows that today is going to be a cool episode where we have an interview guest, because you can already see him on this call right here. And I'm going to let you introduce him, Josh.
Yeah. So everyone, this is my roommate, actually. So you guys are getting to meet everyone in the flat, basically.
Yeah.
So at some point, we'll see if my Italian roommate also wants to be interviewed. I have a good topic that I think might fit well for him. Cough, cough, Eurovision. But yes, this week we have Lachlan, who's joining us. Lachlan is my Australian roommate, and he's the newest one here in the flat, but we've been super happy to have him a part of things. And thank you, Lachlan, for taking the time to talk to us and join us on the podcast.
No, thank you guys. It's pretty exciting, to be honest. I've heard a lot about it from Josh and the others, and everyone talks about how much fun it is. So yeah, I'm excited to be invited.
There's going to be a little bit of competition to see which episode gets more views.
Oh gosh,
Chloe,
no, don't
Letty's
do that.
Or Lachlan's.
Well, I guess
get more than Letty's. As long as I get more than Letty's, I'm happy.
Yeah, well, welcome. I'm super glad that you were able to join us. And actually, when Josh and I planned this episode with you, which again, it was kind of last minute this week, but we're glad that it's working out. We talked about you just a little bit, like which topics we want to cover. And we actually asked our followers on Instagram to submit some questions. And I made sure that he didn't actually tell me too much about you, because I was like, you know what? all I know about you is that you're his new Australian roommate, or like the newest. And that's pretty much it. And of course, I have a lot of questions for an Australian who lives in Germany, but I really don't know when you moved to Germany, why you moved to Germany. I don't know anything about you. So I think this is like a good starting point for me, because I'm at this on the same page as everyone in the audience. What are you doing in Germany? Where are you from? And like maybe you... why and when did you move to Munich? Because that's obviously where you are right now.
Yeah, look, there's lots to cover, and I'll try to cover it really quickly. So I moved here about, it's coming up to 6 months, I think. Mm-hmm. And I moved here straight from Melbourne in Australia. Mm-hmm. Where I'm from in Australia is, to be honest, all over the place. But okay. I've had the last 5 years in Melbourne. Originally, I come from Byron Bay, which is on the east coast. It's a very popular surf town. Okay. Especially for German tourists. Mm-hmm. And I basically came here because pre the pandemic, I was planning to come here for masters. Okay. And I'm an engineer, and I always went to my masters here in Germany. And yeah, it sort of got furloughed because of the whole global deal. And anyway, about late last year, it was the right time. So I moved over here. I had some friends here living in Munich. Mm-hmm. And it's close to the Alps, which is why I chose the city. And the universities here are obviously pretty great. So yeah, it was all in alignment. So I came over here and stayed with some of my Australian friends for a little bit. And then through my long and arduous VGI hunt, I managed to find Josh, Letty, and Savi. And they invited me into their home.
Nice. So what do you do right now? Do you work, or are you actually getting your master's now?
I'm doing my master's at the moment, but okay. You know, it's pretty easy to find work as an engineer with some experience in Germany. I've got 5 years experience so far. And so even before I came over here, I had a job lined up. So I work 2 days a week mm-hmm. doing some engineering things. And then I spend the rest of the time with my head in my laptop.
So you're attending the Technical University München?
Yeah, that's okay. Right.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, that is a very, very good university. It's known worldwide, especially for all the engineering things. I know that a lot of Asian students also come over, especially for engineering and math and all of those majors. So that's really cool that you get in there. Is it difficult to get into a German university, or at least in your experience, to be accepted? Or like, what's the process like for you?
The process is long. That's definitely true. It's bloody long. You apply maybe 6 months, or you start preparing at least 6 months before you want to come into the semester. I think I was looking at least a year ahead. Mm-hmm. You definitely have a few attempts of getting your application right, just through your own essay writing process and speaking with people who know the university. And the other thing is, like, you're never applying to just one. There's always a few that you need to put a bid in for. And then, you know, you'll come out with a few options at the end. I wouldn't say it's terribly hard. I just think it's long. And because they get lots of applications, they make it challenging to apply because they basically want to make sure that you're serious about it, so they don't spend their time processing applications. But I think anyone can really come over here and study and at least do the degree that they want to do and have an awesome experience along the way. So I don't think if anyone's concerned about what grades they need or how hard it is, that it's ever a reason not to apply and find out.
Yeah. And you said earlier that you had been wanting to do that for a while and you wanted to come to Germany for your master's. Was that just like because Germans are known for being good engineers, or why was that?
I just was going to jump in here too. I think you also left out some important information, the fact that you already had experience in Germany before deciding to move here for your studies, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I was here about towards the end of my bachelor's. I had, I think, about a year left when I got back to Australia, and I was here for about 9 months. I lived in Stuttgart. Mm-hmm. And I was working at a research center there doing a practicum, and it was an awesome experience. I had a great time. But I didn't really take the time to learn the language. In that 9 months, I found out that I definitely wanted to come back here and do a master's because, as you said, like, Germans are well known for the engineering prowess and all the amazing things that are going on here in the economy. But I also wanted to come back because I really enjoyed the culture. Mm-hmm. And I had started to learn the language, but I didn't take it very seriously. And I sort of decided, my boss said to me when I was leaving, He's like, you know, you've done well and you've learned a lot of things, but it's like my one disappointment or the thing that you'll come to regret is that you didn't take the opportunity to learn more German. And he was absolutely right. I think I go back to Australia. And when I originally came over here, I had the attitude of, look, I don't know if I really want to learn a second language because it's a tough process. But then by the time I got back, I was pretty proactive about it. I knew that's what I wanted to do. And I knew that if I wanted to come back over here and have friends and have some good experience with the locals, I needed to at least speak some German. So, I went down that path shortly after.
So hold on, I have to follow up here real quick. You said that you didn't really want to learn a second language. So is this the only other language that you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Is it very similar to the US then? Like people just don't learn other languages in Australia?
Well, I think the US is a few steps ahead because we have a really diverse culture as well, but I think most people in the US at least learn Spanish in school. In Australia, there's no national
curriculum. You have to qualify learn.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like the quality of language classes are usually pretty in the US. Like a lot of people that took Spanish for 2 years can maybe order a taco at a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah. That's about it. Well, look, whenever you meet somebody who can, at least from an Australian perspective, who can, you know, show off a few words in another language, like it's always a little bit impressive and you never really know how much they know, but you think, wow, it's like they can speak a second language. Because in Australia, like people definitely study, although they're made to study a second language in school. I think I studied Italian, but I could not remember any of it. Okay. It was only like two years.
Lachlan, why haven't you been jumping in on the Italian conversations that happen around here that in the flat?
Yeah, look, I think I struggled to identify the difference between is it Portuguese and Italian when you guys are deep into it. But in any case, no, it's not very common for most Australians who went through the school system in Australia to speak a second language, at least fluently, to be described as someone as having a second language under their belt.
Okay. I feel like let's get back to the whole German learning process later on because I had another follow-up question. And this actually lines up with what a lot of people, like the questions that people submitted on Instagram. And that is why? Why do you leave Australia, sunny Australia, and move to cold, rainy Munich? And you just mentioned you like the German culture. And I think that will also make a lot of people be like, wait, what? Why? So maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah. Look, it's one of those things I think that you've either felt this or you haven't, or perhaps it's described, like it might polarize people with this description, but sometimes when you grow up somewhere, you've grown up there your whole life and, you know, you have all these amazing memories and amazing experiences and, you know, you describe it as your home and your home is arguably like perfect to you. But sometimes the thing that makes something perfect is that you know what the opposite can be or you know what the alternatives are. And you want to like go and try those other things to know if like home is as perfect as you think it is, or if there's other places out there that are just as incredible as other people describe. And the other thing is that sometimes home is boring. Sometimes you want change. And so like, I would very happily return to Australia. My family's there. It is amazing weather. But I've definitely learned to appreciate how much nicer it is after coming to, they don't like winter in Germany. However, I love the snow. So that's kind of weird for an Australian, but yeah, you leave the summer and you go to the snow and you don't get that experience there. So yeah, it's nice to be here for the differences. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that was a big surprise for me that, I mean, of the Australians that I've met because of you as well, I mean, you guys all love skiing and snowboarding and maybe that's just your friend group. But for me, from the American perspective, I didn't even realize that skiing and snowboarding was even possible in Australia. So to find out that you guys are so into it and that's one of like the big reasons that you guys wanted to be in Munich or near the mountains, like that was such a, not an epiphany for me, but something, it was enlightening because I didn't realize that that was like even a sport that Australians were interested in. But so I thought for me, Australia was like, yeah, surfing and that's basically it.
Yeah. I mean, so, you only have to watch the Olympics to see how good Australia is in the snow sports department, but yeah, look, it is rare that you find Australians that want to go and get into the mountains or enjoy winter sports because we just don't have winter like Europe has or the US has. Mm-hmm. But it's also probably you know, survivor bias. It makes sense that all the Australians here are into snow sports because look at where we are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't fully answer my question. Like, what is it that you like about German culture?
Ooh, okay. Well, I mean, firstly, you guys have a very big drinking culture and that's
yeah, okay.
Very big party culture. It's very similar in Australia, I think. So to come over here and just experience that in a different way and just the joy that people have in throwing parties and having celebrations throughout the year is pretty unique, especially compared to Australia. Like we don't have things like beer festivals or like Frühlingsfest or Oktoberfest. We don't have Carnival. We don't have Mai Tag, I think it is, the 1st of May. Those things just aren't cultivated as deeply in Australia. So to come over here and, you know, every second month there's a new celebration of some sort that in some ways it can be deeply rooted in German culture. In other ways, like maybe it's a new celebration, but in any case, it's just unique. It's different to what we have.
Cool. I like the answer. Also, what you said earlier, I think both Josh and I can totally relate to that too. Just like, yes, you've known your home your whole life. You just want to see what's out there. And like a lot of people ask me, why would you move from Munich, a beautiful city in Germany that has amazing benefits just as a country and when you're an employee, and then come to the US with like the social system that they have here and move to Cincinnati, Ohio? And that's basically my answer too. Like I know that Munich is a great place and I'm probably going to move back there eventually because all my family's there as well, but it's really nice to see what's out there too and make your own experiences in the world.
100%. For sure. I think when I was contemplating the move and I was processing it all with Feli while I was still living in Cincinnati, the question I was always asking myself was, in 10 years, in 10, 20, 30 years from now, looking back, will I regret having taken the opportunity to move abroad for maybe 2 or 3 years and experience something different and see, try things out and see what it is like to leave your bubble? Will I regret that? And I mean, the answer is a strong and definite no from my side at this point. So, I mean, I think that's something that probably all three of us can all agree upon, is that if for the listeners as well, don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone and try out new things and take those big leaps, because I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You move back.
Exactly. That's what I always feel like with any kinds of decision, whether it's like something big like that or even just maybe trying something like a new hobby or a new project that you've never done. It's like, what do you have to lose? If there is not a big risk, then go for it. And I think that's what I told you too, Josh, when we talked about it. I was like, well, if it doesn't work out, you'll just come back home. Not a big deal, because you always have your home. I mean, I don't know what your family situation is like, Lachlan, but I think at least for Josh and I always knew, like, we have our families, like we can fall back on them. Like there's always a place to move back to.
No, my family are definitely behind me on this. So yeah, if I decide that this isn't right, then I can head back home anytime. There's no worry there.
Yeah.
But that sort of raises another point as well. Like sometimes, you know, people want you around all the time, and you know, you say that you're leaving, and you get a lot of you know, like people bringing up risks associated with the decision you're making, and that can sometimes like detract from, or can be overwhelming, and you start to reconsider whether or not going, like making a big move like this is really the right thing. But I think you're absolutely right. Sometimes you just have to find out for yourself, in spite of what people say, if it's the right thing to do. It's just take the risk. I haven't spoken to anybody who's had a bad time. Not once.
Yeah. Same for me. I don't think I know a lot of people who moved abroad and had a really bad experience. And even if, like, I know some people who maybe, like, they ended up in a bad, like, not bad, but just, like, a Viggy or, like, a shared flat where they didn't perfectly get along with everyone. But then they just, like, found a solution for that and kind of made it better for themselves. And, like, looking back a few years later, you're just going to be happy that you had that challenge and that you overcame it. And usually those experiences turn out fine in the end. But did the people try to, like, keep you from going to Germany?
Oh, you know, as soon as you tell your mom that you're going to be moving,
okay, just
out to the other side of the world, then.
Yeah, family, I think that's a normal thing.
Yeah, I mean, I got it from all sides, especially because I moved, at least from Australia's perspective, in the middle of the pandemic. Like when I left, nobody had been vaccinated. I just managed to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. The situation in Europe was not great. Germany was still in lockdown. Like, you know, we weren't free, so to speak, like in a conventional way, in Melbourne, but it was better looking than the situation around the globe. And, you know, like everyone asked me, like, why now? Why would you go now? It just didn't make sense, if you put it on paper. But, you know, you can't argue with your personal choices. You know, sometimes you just gotta go with it.
I kind of have a question related to that as well. You said that moving right in the middle of the pandemic, why now? I'm sure you had a certain imagination or image of what moving to Germany in the pandemic with everything going on with COVID would be like, especially regarding university and what your class structure would be like in person versus online. How has it met your expectations, and has it been kind of what you were expecting, or is it completely different? Yeah, just maybe you can elaborate a little bit on how your experience with that has been.
Well, I mean, my expectations evolved over time, because I think when I made the final decision, it was like July 2021, mm-hmm. and I didn't move until 3 or 4 months later. So I had to resign from work and give my 2 months' notice. I had to like start packing up my home, finish leases. Like, there's a lot of preparation that takes a bit of time before you can go. And then there was like government related bureaucratic reasons that before I could get out of the country. And so like originally I was sort of like, okay, I can see that the pandemic is coming to an end. So my expectation is that it's going to be like it is in Melbourne, which is people are still staying at home. There's not a lot of like activities where large groups of people can get together, but at least there's, you know, some freedom. And in fact, over the time, up until September when I arrived, everything here had opened up. So it completely overlapped my expectations. It completely exceeded them. You know, I think I went to a beer garden the first time in like a year and a half at that point. I was able to meet with friends and have a good time and have a celebration. I was able to go to parties and nightclubs and travel. I think my first week was in Switzerland and I traveled around, and that's, you know, that definitely exceeded my expectations at the time. With regards to uni, it started off really well. It's the first time I've been in a uni lecture hall for 5 years, but it was nice to be in the environment. The unfortunate thing is, I think 2 months of freedom meant 2 months of Germany getting as much celebrating in as they could, because then the pandemic led to another lockdown. And it was a very quick and sharp closing of everything around maybe end of October. Yeah. So then everything was online. So since then I've sort of been studying remotely, but, you know, in the VG with the other guys.
Yeah, did you have a decent experience still with like connecting with people and making friends? Because you said you had some Australian friends there, right? So that's helpful then, probably, if you already knew some people. But usually when you like move, that's what Josh also had like as a concern in the beginning. If you move in the beginning of the pandemic and there's just not a lot of social life going on, how do you make friends? How do you meet people? Did that work out okay for you?
Yeah, look, it was I've definitely gotten to know a lot more Australians and English speakers than I expected off the bat. Mm-hmm. I think there's like 800 Australians in Munich, and I know like 20% of them now.
Cool.
And that was the advantage of having friends here when I arrived. And they don't speak a lot of German, maybe some German at work. So most of their circles tend to be English speaking circles. But I mean, I've got other German friends. The real challenge has been trying to get to know people now that university's gotten back online. You have to rely on reaching out to people in WhatsApp groups and just like starting a conversation about a topic. And then sometimes like if they're interested enough, then you can, I don't know, go get a coffee or go for a run or whatever. In fact, I think I mentioned to Josh, I went for a run with a new guy that I just met through a WhatsApp group at uni just yesterday. And he's in a similar situation. He's from Dresden, and he moved here at the beginning of the pandemic. And so, you know, he doesn't have a lot of circles here, and people are just interested to meet other people, I think, now, given enough time has passed where we've all been stuck inside.
And I mean, you've only been here for what you said, 6 months at this point too. So, as we've said in the podcast before, Germans are relatively slow to open up, to new friends. So yeah. It makes sense too. And I hopefully as things continue to get better with the pandemic and the situation here in Germany. I mean, I've said it too. I think most of my friends here are English speaking, and that was not what I was expecting at all when I first moved here. I spoke more German in my private life in the U.S. than I did here, than I do here, basically.
Yeah, it's wild.
Which is pretty crazy to think about, but yeah, no, that makes sense. But that would, I don't know how you would make that transition. That would be hard for me. And I think I may have mentioned on the podcast before, but I cannot imagine going to any sort of school or university during the pandemic. I mean, it's just, that's a big thing to willingly go through. So respect to you for doing that.
Yeah. Well, it's been interesting. That's for sure. But, in regards to friends, I can't go without saying that most of my friend circles since the hard lockdowns commenced in Munich are thanks to Josh, because Josh, as he said, like has gotten his roots here a bit, and, he knows lots of people from other areas, and, you know, everyone's sort of come together in this time. So yeah, some of my closest friends that I could rely on are friends I've made through Josh. So there's a huge thanks there for that.
Aww, and thanks really to sweet. My friends. I love the fact that I've lived in two VGs, and I love how intertwined the two of them have become and the social circle that we've been able to develop here. So
yeah, you're in the connecting piece there.
Indeed. I do take responsibility for that.
I was wondering if we should jump into some of the questions that people had for us.
Yeah, let's do it.
So looking at all of these questions that people submitted on Instagram, we just said, what questions do you have for an Australian who moved to Munich? And a lot of them are the same. So I think the most common question was, do you miss Vegemite? And I have no clue what that is. I don't even know if I pronounced that correctly. What is that?
Well, firstly, you've done very well to pronounce it the first time.
Thank you.
Vegemite, I might say. But yeah, I've
do you say Vegemite?
Vegemite, yeah, that's right.
Ah, like, okay, interesting.
Say it quickly, it's Vegemite, but yeah, you did well, Fairly. Well, firstly, no, I don't miss it because I've got a huge jar of it in the cupboard, so I'm set up.
What is it?
Disgusting.
I really wish I had it right next to me. I could show you, but I'm surprised to hear that from you, Josh.
When I first brought
it to the apartment, it got, you know, okay reviews.
Yeah. No, I'm exaggerating.
Frankly, it's a spread and it's black. It doesn't look very appealing. And it's very bitter. I think is the way I describe it. Very, very salty. And, my experience when I give it to other people to sort of, you know, apply themselves to whatever bread or whatever they're eating, is they always put on too much. They think it's like, oh, it's like peanut butter or it's like honey, you know, put it everywhere. But no, its flavor is much too intense and they'll end up getting a shock. But yeah, it's just unique. It's not something that I've really found anywhere else in the world. And it seems to be the one thing that Australians are known for is having this.
Yeah, apparently, because this is full of it.
A jar.
Yeah, people are asking, why do people like Vegemite? Do you long for Vegemite? Like, that's the main question.
But no, I mean, I would, like I said, I was exaggerating. It was pretty tasty. Like I would say it's, like you said, bitter, salty, and I think the word earthy also comes to mind when I try to describe it.
Sure.
But would you know exactly what it's made of?
No, I mean,
does it have anything to do with like broth or like vegetable stock? Because that's kind of what it sounds like to me. But I don't know if that's what it tastes like in any way.
I'll be honest. I've never been bold enough to really look. I have a suspicion that it's a leftover, it's a byproduct of like a beer making process. But I couldn't really tell you. All I know is it says there's lots of B vitamins, and all the kids love it. So that's
really
that's,
even
it's my
even
experience.
Though it's bitter.
Yeah, look, it's kind of funny, actually. It's almost like the first time you have it when you're a kid, it's gross. It's pretty intense. But, you know, you just sort of get, like, sucked into it. It's like an acquired taste. You grow up with it. All your siblings are eating it, and they supposedly love it. And then by the time you're an adult, you can't imagine this ever tasting bad. You just, you know, you've acquired the taste.
Sounds like and then, when we talk about Skyline Chili.
Yeah, that too. I was going to say beer, chili. But yeah. So Skyline Chili, I don't think I'll have to bring some back next time I go to the US. But it's a typical dish from Cincinnati. It's called Cincinnati style chili. You've had Cincinnati style chili that I've made for people.
It was great.
But that was homemade, which is very different than the way that Skyline chili actually tastes. So I'll bring back a can of Skyline so you can give it a try. But yeah, it's just a local specialty that people don't really tend to like if they're not from Cincinnati.
Yeah, so you always usually say it's like an acquired taste. So that's why I felt like it sounds a little bit similar.
Yeah.
But okay, now I know that. Interesting. I guess I'm going to have to try that at some point, but it doesn't sound like I would like it.
We'll have to send you some. I'm sure there's got to be an international store near
there's
Italy
a huge,
that you can
they
find
have it
one.
At Jungle Gyms.
Yeah,
I'm sure they
have
it at Jungle
Gyms. There's a huge
international
store here. I could probably go get it and try it and then hate it.
Definitely. put it on your Instagram. People will love it. You know, and tell them where they can find it.
I think Brits have a similar version called Marmite or something different. It's different, but...
Yeah, I think it's the same principle, but it's kind of like, you know, when there's like two, like we've had knockoff versions of Nutella here, Josh, like, and they're never the same as like the Nutella.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. There's other variants of like Vegemite, whatever it actually is. But Vegemite is the OG.
Yeah. There you go.
Do Australians eat Nutella?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not as popular. Like when you have Vegemite to compete with, and
sure, yes, of course.
No, definitely.
I was more asking because, like, Americans, their Nutella is basically peanut butter, whereas, like, in Germany, everyone loves Nutella. Nutella is everywhere. Do you guys eat peanut butter in Australia?
No, I've never had peanut butter in my life.
I'm confused. No, like, do you eat it a lot? Is my question.
He's being sarcastic. You should see how much peanut butter this man goes through.
Okay. I thought he was joking, but I couldn't really tell, like, on what scale.
No, I was definitely hoping Josh would jump in there. Yeah, yes. I eat a lot of peanut butter. But
a lot of peanut butter. And that's coming from an American saying that he eats a lot of peanut butter.
Mm-hmm. You asked me about Nutella, Feli. I think in Australia, at least in my home, you know, we don't need Nutella for breakfast. It's kind of like a dessert spread.
Yep.
Whereas, I don't know, the way I've seen it advertised here and maybe even the US is it tends to be a breakfast thing. I don't know.
But I feel like it's not really a thing in the US though, like as much. Like I know a lot of people who've never even tried Nutella in the US. Like I don't know if it's advertised
poor
as
people.
A breakfast spread in the US, but it definitely is in Germany. And even the soccer, like the national soccer team usually advertises for Nutella, making it all seem like healthy and you can be a professional athlete if you eat Nutella, which like, of course, it's not healthy at all. Peanut butter is much healthier than Nutella is, unfortunately, because Nutella tastes better. But.
Don't tell him that because then he's going to start eating more peanut butter.
Okay, I think
so
we're done with
jump
that
to the
topic.
Next question. Yes.
Yeah, you pick one.
Let's see. This one. So this question I thought was interesting because I feel like this probably at least would happen a lot if you were in the U.S. or when you were in the U.S. Because I know that you visited the U.S. before, Lachlan. I don't think you've been to the mainland of the U.S., but you've been on U.S. territory at least. Let's say.
Yeah.
But do Germans mistake you for British?
It does happen, definitely. I think... I don't really know why. I mean, there's a lot of similarities in the accent, but I also think there's enough to really distinguish one from the other. However, there have definitely been times where I've watched a program or I've heard like an announcement and I've had to ask myself if that was British or an Australian. But yeah, it's come up a few times. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because that's what I was thinking is if you were in the US and I know like before I had too much exposure to both right, I'd say more varieties of both accents or generally both accents. Distinction that's relatively difficult for me to make or was difficult for me to make for a while. So I was wondering if that would happen more often here in Germany than maybe it would have in the U.S.
Probably because if you're not a native speaker, then it's always harder for you to distinguish between different accents. And for me, like I could honestly, it's still to this day, I can't really distinguish it. Like I usually know, but just by the fact that I find Australians harder to understand. So if I struggle to understand you, I'm just like, you must be Australian.
And I think that was actually one of the other questions. Jumping into it, another person asked, can Germans understand your Aussie accent when speaking German and or English? And I can say from personal experience that maybe not the Germans, but the people that we live with struggle understanding you sometimes.
Definitely, yeah.
In German or in English?
In English.
No, well, we live in Italian with an Italian and Letty, which you guys have already spoken with, I think. And yeah, they really struggle with my accent. It's been an eye-opener how quickly perhaps you speak in your native language. Like Josh and I speak pretty quickly. Josh's enunciation is perfect, as is pretty classic for the American accent. Mine, I think perhaps I mumble too much because Savi, our Italian housemate, he definitely struggles with me if I speak too quickly. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to German, no. I mean, naturally, like my pronunciation isn't perfect. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done in that respect. But, you know, when I'm at work or when I'm out and about, like I don't look Australian. They think I'm just a local. And so when I speak German, it doesn't exactly like come out straight away. It's only when I say like, I don't know, use the wrong conjugation or something or something like this that it starts to come apparent that, oh, he's not a local or he's not German.
Okay, so your German speaking journey has been pretty successful then? So your German is pretty
part,
good? Okay,
cool. I mean, I wouldn't say it's really good, but it's good enough to study and work in, which is a pretty good yardstick, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Do we get to test you? No. We won't put you on the spot and make you do anything in German unless you want to.
You going to throw me some hard words or
no.
test my knowledge of grammar? Or
we sometimes have German-speaking parts on the podcast. We could do that. We don't have to.
We don't have to.
No, I'm all for it. Do you have lots of German speakers that ride in? Is that really common?
Actually, the majority of our listeners are Germans.
Really? That's fascinating. Yes. I would have thought there'd be lots of people curious about Germany and that's what brings them to the podcast.
That's like the other half. I want to say it's like 45-55%, something like that, like 40-60, something along those lines. But the bigger part is actually Germans. But then all the other people, they constantly ask us, hey, can you speak more German on the podcast? Because we want to practice our German. We want to see if we can understand what you're saying. So I don't know. Would you feel comfortable maybe answering one question in German?
Natürlich.
Das, was mich interessieren würde, so we're going to do a little bit in German and then we'll explain at the end, once we're done with the German section, what we talked about.
Alles klar.
Aber das, was mich interessieren würde, ist zu wissen, wie so deine Erfahrung ist im Büro, beziehungsweise du arbeitest auf Deutsch, also als Ingenieur. Also das ist bestimmt, war zumindest bestimmt am Anfang ein bisschen schwierig. Ich kenne das aus persönlicher Erfahrung, dass man eine gewisse Zeit braucht, bis man wirklich die richtigen Wörter lernt, so weiter und so fort. Wie war deine Erfahrung mit dem Thema?
Ja, es ist eine gute Frage, definitiv. Also bisher hatte ich keine ingenieurwissenschaftliche Wörter gelernt, also außer nur ein paar von Nachrichten oder vielleicht ein paar Fachbücher. Also meiste Wörter habe ich bei der Arbeit gelernt von meiner Kollegin, weil also bei der Goethe-Institut oder also andere Gesprächsschule, also Sprachschulen, besonders in Australien, also das Thema um Ingenieurwissenschaft ist nicht so populär. Und es ist eigentlich nicht so hilfreich beim Alltagsgespräch. Also man muss definitiv diese neue Wörter lernen bei der Arbeit, finde ich. Oder man kann ständig Fachbücher lesen, aber das ist klar langweilig. Die ersten paar Wochen waren ziemlich schwierig. Also um meine Meinung über Themen wie unsere Technologie hergestellt sollten oder wie es designt sollte oder wie ich irgendwas konstruieren soll, war definitiv schwierig. Die Gespräche waren eigentlich leicht zu verstehen. Aber ja, um ein tiefes Gespräch, um meine Meinung über bestimmte Themen zu geben, fände ich schwierig. Vielleicht konnte ich ein paar Sachen dazu geben oder interessante Ideen vorschlagen, aber um es deutlich zu erklären in der deutschen Sprache, fand ich schwierig. Aber bis jetzt haben wir eigentlich kein Englisch bei der Arbeit gesprochen. Also es gefällt alle da besser, wenn wir ständig auf Deutsch reden. Und das natürlich cool. gefällt es mir auch. Ja,
ja. ja. das ist eigentlich echt gut, weil das passiert ja nicht immer. Es gibt ja richtig viele Deutsche, die dann eher schnell auf Englisch wechseln, weil sie das Gefühl haben, sie tun dir einen Gefallen damit. Aber es ist wahrscheinlich viel, viel besser für dich, wenn du alles auf Deutsch machen kannst, dass du halt auch schneller lernst und so weiter.
Ja, definitiv. Was ist mir auch auffällig bei der Uni, ist, dass beim Lesen, also wenn es geht um diese Fachbuch oder also diese Vorlesungen, also mein Hörenkenntnis, mein Verständnis, um was lesen und es zu verstehen in bestimmte Themen, ist viel besser geworden. Aber wenn ich über diese Themen sprechen muss, also meist die Wörter bleiben immer noch in meiner Passivwortschatz. Also ist es immer ein bisschen schwieriger, so bestimmte Wörter, also mich an bestimmte Wörter zu erinnern.
Ich habe das ja heute noch. Also du bestimmt auch manchmal. Ich
wollte gerade sagen, das ist ein ständiges Thema zwischen uns. Ja.
Also manchmal sage ich einfach ein Wort auf Englisch und dann denke ich mir kurz so, warte kurz, gibt es das Wort? Habe ich mir das gerade ausgedacht? Aber irgendwie, mein Hirn hat sich anscheinend daran erinnert, aber ich hätte dir jetzt nicht wirklich sicher sagen können, ob dieses Wort überhaupt existiert. Ich hatte nur irgendwie das Gefühl, so das, und dann weiß ich aber auch gar nicht sicher, heißt das überhaupt das, was ich gerade sagen möchte? Benutze ich das gerade richtig? Ja. Also ich meine, das hat man ja noch Jahre später,
dieses Problem. Ich hatte tatsächlich vor kurzem in der Arbeit eine lustige Situation. Und zwar, ich wusste schon, dass das, was ich gesagt habe, falsch war, aber die richtige Art und Weise, wie man das normalerweise ausdrücken würde, ist mir nicht eingefallen in dem Moment und deswegen habe ich dann gesagt, ich weiß, das, was ich jetzt sagen werde, ich weiß, dass es falsch ist. Also bitte nicht zu viel lachen. Ich wollte zufriedenstellen sagen. Mhm. Also wie man einen Kunden zufriedenstellt. Mhm. Aber das Wort zufriedenstellen ist mir nicht eingefallen. Das Einzige, was mir eingefallen ist,
Befriedigen. Also das ist aber auch nicht so schlimm. Kann man zwar auch in einer sexuellen Art und Weise benutzen, das Wort, aber man kann es auch normal benutzen. Also,
okay, das wusste ich nicht.
Also zum Beispiel ganz offiziell in Schulen, wenn wir Zeugnisse bekommen in Deutschland, ist es normal, man hat zwar so Zahlen, also halt Noten 1 bis 6, aber die werden meistens im Zeugnis in Worte übersetzt. Sprich, eine 1 ist heißt sehr gut, eine 2 ist gut, eine 3 ist befriedigend zum Beispiel. Also das ist auch ein normales Wort.
Gut zu wissen.
Also should we switch back to English?
Sure, we totally can.
We're gonna add subtitles too, so it's gonna be a little bit of work.
We'll see how quickly the subtitles get put up there, but
The only thing I wanted to add, which I think is important, especially if people are considering coming over to Germany and working in German, but it's their second language, especially in like the technology fields. The wonderful thing about German is that everything is just a longer description of what it's made of. You know, like the words that make up its name are like purely a description of what it is. And that's probably like unique to engineering in general. But if you speak enough German to like get around daily life, then just like Josh's experience, if you don't know the word for something, you could probably describe it and get like pretty close to the real word.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. So basically what we talked about in German was I asked Lachlan what his experience has been with working in German in an engineering company. And pretty much everything that you do at work is in German. So just kind of wanting to hear about your experiences of how that's been. it was a long conversation in German to try to recap.
Mainly he said that, or you said that you were getting by just fine. You speak a lot of German at work, but that in the beginning was pretty hard to know all the engineering terminology, especially you said that you understood a lot and it's easy for you to pick up on the words and understand when you hear it and read it, but then it's sometimes hard to remember it when you actually need to use it yourself, both Josh and I said that we have similar experiences still to this day. So I think that sums it up pretty well.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. But a huge credit to the people I work with. They're very patient, very welcoming. I think
that's awesome.
You know, they could speak English as well as that I could speak German, but they naturally want to speak German at work. And so they know that I want to learn. So for the most part, as I said, we rarely ever speak English. I think the only time we use English words is because sometimes there are engineering words which only have an English definition, crash test, is a popular one that we would use.
What, is there no German translation for that?
Also Aufprallversuch.
Okay, aber you just aber yeah you just say crash. Yeah, we sagen einfach yeah, auch, yeah.
Crash test.
Crash test. Yeah. Yeah. Stimmt. Yeah, I mean, that's a case a lot in German that we just use English words anyway. Sometimes when people ask me, hey, what does that word mean in English? I just like repeat the English word. Yeah. I don't have a good example right now. But for example, crash test would be one of those things. Or like people ask me, how do Germans say fuck in German? I'm like, well, we fuck is what we say.
Yeah, it does lead to some funny situations. Though, when the Germans take English words and change them slightly than the way that we would say them, though. Mm. For example, going to a shooting means something different in Germany than it would in an English-speaking country.
Yeah. And of course, even the words that we do use correctly, like some kind of special terminology at work or something like that, we usually pronounce it with our German accent. So it would be a crash test. Probably.
Exactly.
Cool. Let's go to another question.
Yeah, you get the next question. I think, Felia, I asked this the last one.
Okay, this one is definitely interesting for me. It's, what do Aussies think about the German backpackers? And everyone who's German knows that Australia and New Zealand are like two countries where a lot of Germans, especially after we graduate high school, so like after Abitur or whatever, a lot of young people go to those countries to do like a half year backpacking trip or like work and travel, those kinds of things. And also later on in life, people still do that, but especially young people in there when they're 19, 20, 18, like that age range. So what do Australians think of that?
I mean, it's great. I mean, otherwise, where else will we meet Germans in the world? Like, if we weren't going to come here to Germany, then the fact that they're in our community is a wonderful thing. Some of my best friends back home are Germans who did that. They left after like some period of work or period of study and did 12 months and decided, oh, I might stay here a little bit longer and, you know, happen to be living in the city where I was. And they're still there. They've had a great time. They've been there since the beginning of the pandemic. And the others who decided to go home, like I wouldn't have had as many friends here if it weren't for the German backpackers that I met in Australia. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, between me and my friends and, you know, people from the community that I'm from, like, you know, we want as many travelers through as we can because it's the only other way that we sometimes get to experience culture that's just too far away to fly for some people.
So the culture is just coming to you, basically. That's kind of nice.
In many ways. Yeah.
But
that's a lot of fun.
From my perspective, I just am wondering because, like, it's a thing in Germany as far as, like, everyone knows about, oh, going to Australia, going to New Zealand for backpacking. Is that, like, a thing that Australians are aware of, that, like, that you guys are a big destination for European backpackers? Or is that more of just like a, oh, it's great that these people are here, we're happy, but it's not like a, oh, this is a thing that Germans do?
No, I don't think it's well known. I think it's just you know, people see it as a coincidence. There's, you know, there's lots of backpackers from all over the world that come to Australia, and there's definitely a lot of Germans. Like, I won't downplay it, but I don't think anybody's connected those dots. There's definitely, I mean, people who travel find these things out, or perhaps have like close friends tend to find these things out. But I would say generally it's not well known that it's a big travel destination for Germany to go to Australia.
Okay. Okay, so you don't have any memes about German backpackers or something like that, like we do in Germany, where like we make fun of the Lisa 19 kommt gerade aus Australien zurück und spricht kein Wort Deutsch mehr. It's like a lot of memes on like those types of people, which of course is like a generalization and kind of mean, but they're like their own breed kind of.
Yeah, it's I've been shown those memes by my German friends in Australia, and I have to agree that they're pretty funny, they're pretty good. But no, if I didn't have them to show me, I would have never heard of them.
Okay.
But like, after they're written in German, like no one in Australia is going to pick that up.
But no, that's good. I mean, I'm glad that apparently we're not leaving a bad impression. I'm saying we because I mean, I identify with all of these other Germans, but I mean, that is a thing. Like, Germans just travel a lot. Like, German tourists are everywhere in the world. Like, whether you go to Thailand or Australia or South Africa or the US, we're everywhere. If you're a German tourist yourself, you're definitely going to run into at least one other German tourist on your trip, even if you're trying to be in the non-touristy areas. So I'm glad to hear that apparently we're not ruining our reputation over there. That's good.
No, definitely not. I would say that, you know, like it's definitely encouraged. People want as many tourists that come through as they can, because what's perhaps a little bit hard for most people to grasp is that, you know, Australia is about the size of Europe. Australia is huge, but the population is about 25 million. So, yeah. I mean, fair enough. Most people live on the coasts, but they're all very spread out. So you don't get this like dense concentration of different cultures, except for like maybe Melbourne, maybe Sydney. So if you live in the country and there's like German tourists that come to town, you know, they could be kids who have left high school and they're doing that year of work travel. They could be like a family that are there for, you know, some other reason. They're just interesting to engage with, because otherwise you wouldn't find them.
Yeah, that makes sense. That is crazy to think of, that Australia is that big and just has that many people.
Yeah.
It's very different.
Yeah, it's very empty.
Okay, can I ask another question?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, what are the most, well, it's not my question, it's someone's question. What are the most annoying stereotypes you have to deal with? Or are there any?
Oh, that's a good question. Look, I feel like Australians make stereotypes. I feel like we're some of the people who, because we don't understand other cultures, because there's not as much of them in Australia, we tend to make stereotypes wrongly. But stereotypes of Australians, oh man, I don't think I've really fallen into any, or I've been confronted with any stereotypes since I've got here, especially not from the Germans. I mean, I think Josh and I have good banter at times about like what Australian stereotypes are, what American stereotypes are, but I mean, there aren't a lot.
So we actually wanted to talk about that too. What's it like with the two of you? Because you're two English native speakers in the VG now, but you speak like slightly different English, if you will. I know that obviously you have different accents, but you also sometimes use different words, right? How was that? Because Josh said it's sometimes really funny.
It can be pretty funny. Sometimes, you know, I like to, you know, impose a gift upon the household now that I'm here, and that's to, you know, help Josh improve his English.
Speaking Australian is an improvement. Okay.
100%. So like, for example, when we began this podcast, this episode, Josh was describing me as his roommate. Well, I don't live in his room. I have my own room. Flatmate, yeah, or housemate.
This is true. I will give you that one. We struggle in the U.S. with having a proper word for that. So that's, I'm willing to concede. But no, I think what's been weird for me, at least having Lachlan around now, is me being the minority oftentimes when it comes to native English speakers, because I don't really have many American friends here, but Lachlan has Australian friends, so it's not uncommon that there are four native English speakers and I'm the only American, the rest are Australian. Mm-hmm. So then I get made fun of for my hard R's or weird pronunciations of my vowels. So that's been an adjustment for me, because Americans are almost always the majority when it comes to native English speakers in a group that I've been in, at least, obviously coming from the US. And then also, I don't know, I don't really have any British friends or any British friends, so I've never experienced that, but yeah, that's been a weird experience for me, is being the minority. And then some of the words you use, I just don't understand. I think because American culture is pretty prevalent throughout the world, you have a head start as far as understanding, quote unquote, some of my slang.
Definitely.
But you'll pull out some words sometimes. I know that for like the two that come to mind right now are bogan and fanging. Are the two that have stuck for me.
Yeah, I'm lost.
Do you have any clue what they mean, Faili?
No. I mean, maybe if you say it in a sentence, but then it's probably pretty obvious. I don't know. Can you try and give me an example?
Well, I mean, I think bogan is probably best to describe. It's kind of, I guess, I don't know, what's the American equivalent? A hick?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like...
Hick.
Hick. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like kind of like, you know, someone from... Generally from the country, they tend to be like a little bit simple.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're just, yeah, they have a culture of their own that tends to be quite far outside mainstream culture. And yeah, it's not a very nice term, but it's mostly used as a joke. Like people call each other a bogan when they do something that's maybe like basic in a way.
Okay. And then what's the other one?
What was the other one? Fanging.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about when we used that.
Yeah, I specifically remember the context. Your friend Hugh was over, and he was talking about how he was fanging it to work.
And then
you stopped the conversation and said, Josh, you didn't understand that, did you?
Yeah.
Like, is it trying to get something to work, like the TV, or is it something to go to work? I'm confused.
Fanging,
booking it.
Yeah, like you're going very quickly. Like to fang.
Still confused.
I don't know where it comes from, but it's an Australianism for sure.
But no, like, okay, give me another example. Like, in which context would you say it?
It's diverse. You would say, like, just as Hugh used it, he's like, I was fanging to work, or I was fanging around on my motorcycle. It just means you're driving really fast.
Okay.
But someone might also say, like, I'm fanging for a feed, which means they're really hungry.
Okay.
But like,
see, that one makes more sense though, because it eating with your teeth, your fangs, I'm fanging for a feed. But yeah. Fanging it to work, fanging to work is. Will remain a mystery to me, but
I mean,
these are
that's
the small
what slang
conversations
is.
That we have.
Yeah, slang doesn't always make sense.
I would say, like, a lot of the slang in Australia is, like, very old. Like, we tend to learn the things that, like, our parents would say, and we still use it. Like, everyone has heard, or I guess Australians might be well known for saying g'day, which is, like, a shortening of good day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit like, g'day, mate, or, like, that is something that... is old as time, as long as time has been tracked in Australia anyhow. Like I don't know where that began, but it's been a part of my life and every generation will say it. Or like referring to people by mate.
Yeah.
Josh and I were talking about this the other day, and that is it, like, I mean, you wouldn't really call someone who's senior to you bro, but in Australia, like, I would call someone who's senior to me mate.
Yeah. That's definitely a thing that I would connect with Australians as well, but also a little bit with British people too.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
What has been really unfair, I think, just while you're thinking about it, Josh, is that so now that we have two native English speakers in the house, we don't practice enough German between the two of us, which is pretty disappointing on our part. When our housemates are trying to learn German and we just keep switching to English. But also because we have, like, Letty and Savi who are speaking English, we tend to just, like, unfairly make fun of them for the crazy things they say. which is not really fair on us. We should be encouraging them, but
yeah, you should be speaking their languages, which I guess Josh is trying to at least speak French. Do you speak French with Letty every now and then?
No, she made fun of me the other day because I haven't learned enough French. I have very little sympathy knowing Leticia of she can give it just as well as she can take it. So, I'm not too concerned about her, but yeah, no, you're right. We should be more considerate of the fact that these people are speaking our languages, but yeah.
Our languages, you said.
Or our languages.
Australian English and American English are two different languages. I mean,
I am proud of the fact that they refer to sweaters as sweaters and not jumpers, just saying.
yeah,
who
right.
says jumpers?
Australians.
Everyone but Americans. And maybe Canadians.
Huh. Didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe also because we don't say sweater in German, but we say sweatshirt. Sweatshirt.
Pullover.
Yeah. So, like, we have that term kind of too in the German language. So, I didn't actually know that. Interesting. Okay. Let's move on from that, maybe. I definitely have more questions prepared. And it's kind of a broad question, but I have two specific examples. So, my broader question is, what was, like, hard for you to get used to in Germany? What were some of those, like, big obstacles culturally or the climate also that you had to get used to? And two of my main questions there are, number one, driving. Do you drive? What was it like the first time? And then weather and also slash, like, the switched summer and winter thing. I don't even know. What do you call that? The changed switched seasons.
Yeah.
It's just the consequence of flying across the globe. Okay. The first question, what's been hard to get used to, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what have been the hurdles?
Yeah,
Number one,
my questions tend to be super long, but I'm glad you can keep up.
No, I'm all for this. So this is, when I was here in 2015, it was far more prevalent than it is now. And I think this is because of the pandemic that things have changed. But the use of cash in Germany is a big thing. In Australia, like, everything's digital. maybe it's because we're naive about our security, but the people here in Germany are very like particular about it. So people didn't trust like Paywave and things when I was here in 2015. Yeah. So I always had to have cash on me. Whereas, it's been hard to get used to. And I always find myself, even now, like going out and not having cash and finding myself in an awkward situation. So it's been slow for me to get used to. Mm-hmm. Or just not knowing when to expect that someone is only going to be using cash. Like if I go for a hike or something now, I think the first time I went for a hike in the mountains, I didn't think about it and I didn't bring cash with me. And so I got to the top of this mountain eager to have a beer, and then I was like, I didn't have anything with me. No, I don't know. I was with friends. So it was no big deal, but you don't want to be that guy like asking for help in that way. In regard to driving, the first time I was here, like years ago, it was definitely a challenge. Like learning to drive on the other side of the road is not easy. Everything's back to front. Being in the wrong side of the car, having to, you know, change, like I drive a manual, and that's a big thing here in Germany and Europe in general, like people generally drive manual cars. I kept throwing my hand into the window when I was like going to reach for the gear stick.
Because you were using the wrong hand.
Because I was using the wrong hand. So I like perpetually like putting my fist into the window.
That would probably be the most difficult thing for me. Remembering that it's on the other side. Yeah. Because you're so used to that. You do that. I mean, I don't know if you drove a manual in Australia before, but if you're just used to that, doing that with the one hand, I don't even know if I could do it with the other hand. Because you have these movements down. Gosh, right. I never thought about that part.
I mean, I don't, you pick it up quick. It's not as hard as you might think, but you'll have some bruised knuckles. Like I definitely took the skin off my knuckles a couple of times, like hitting the side of the door or whatever. And it shocks you. Like it's pretty funny. But like people are so organized on the roads here as well, mm-hmm. which is astounding to me. Like there's this unwritten etiquette to like how people manage traffic amongst themselves, like how people drive around the Autobahn. Thankfully, I had my friend Hugh who'd been here for 3 years, and he sort of, you know, taught me everything as we were traveling around Switzerland and Germany. Mm-hmm. But I think if I was left to my own devices and just, you know, to learn from experience, I would definitely be, you know, pissing a few people off on the highway. But no, it's not as daunting as some people might think. Okay. I think.
I mean, I've only done it on a scooter and not in a car, so like I don't even know if that helps to be also on the other side of the car or if that makes it even more difficult. I've done it in Thailand on a scooter, which like riding a scooter in Thailand is hard enough because there's no traffic rules whatsoever. Everyone just crosses the red lights, even in like Bangkok, like it's just crazy. And then riding a scooter, if you're not really used to it, is actually more dangerous than many people think. There's lots of accidents in like all those Asian countries all the time, especially with tourists on scooters. And then like turning right for me, I remember every time I was turning right on one of those big intersections, I was freaking out because I was like, wait, hold on, make sure that you're going in the right lane because like it's just so different. And that's my only experience. So I'm kind of imagining that doing that in Germany, especially with like speeds like on the Autobahn and things like that, would be intimidating.
Yeah, definitely. And people aren't afraid here to let you know what they think.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, German drivers are very impatient and also they're pretty quick to honk at you.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then I fit in well here. Lachlan, have you gotten an appointment for your driver's license yet?
No, I have not.
Good luck.
Much to the despair of my Australian friends who, really strongly recommended it. No, something that I've learned is like Josh has had this whole escapade of getting a driver's license here. And because I was here a few years ago, I have a suspicion that I'm going to have the same drama. Mm-hmm. But my head's been in the university space up until, my break's coming up, and then I'll have to deal with that problem then and there. But if you had to ask me again about like what's been hard to get used to here, is how bureaucratic things can be. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. That's the only way to put it.
I think that's what everyone says. It doesn't even matter which country they're from. Germans seem to just be the kings of bureaucracy, but also of slow, non-efficient bureaucracy.
I think one thing that Lachlan and I have also discussed about bureaucracy is in our home countries, we're comfortable and we know the limits of where we can push and how argumentative we can be and what we need to say to get the wheels of bureaucracy to work for us. But being in a different country where it's a different language and the people just think differently or have a different approach to the same topics, it's difficult to figure out the new playbook or the new playbook and also rule book.
Yeah. There isn't the thing in German bureaucracy. There isn't really a rule book except there is a rule book, but there is nothing that's in between the lines. You can't really, there's no wiggle room. You have to follow the steps, you have to follow the process. That's what I feel Germans are so big on. They're not very goal oriented with those things, and just in general, I think, and especially with bureaucracy, I feel like the experience that you've had, Josh, with that one person that kind of just told you, no, you have to do this. This is what it says here. You have to do this. That's what a German's experience is like too. Just because we're from that country doesn't mean that these people treat us any nicer. So I think that's just how it works, unfortunately, in Germany.
Maybe just asking another question from our Instagram poll, if you will. What was your first experience with snow and Christmas in the winter? So that's kind of hinting at what Feli was asking about the differences with the seasons being at a different time of the year. How has that experience been for you? And then also Christmas when it's cold outside.
It's been interesting for sure. I think when I left Australia, I knew that I was moving somewhere that it does get quite cold. Mm. And so having been here before, I knew that the best winter clothing to get is the winter clothing here already in Germany. And to bring anything from Australia, I'd just be wasting my time. It's not, it's winter clothing and costs half as much and does a quarter of the job. Not very sufficient. So when I got here, I didn't have a lot of winter clothing with me and it got cold very quickly and I didn't anticipate it. So there were a few times where I went running in shorts or I was walking around in just with my legs exposed and people would comment. People would go out of their way to tell me you shouldn't be doing this. Actually not even that long ago, I went running with another Australian friend of mine who's not far from us. And I was just wearing shorts and this old lady came up to me and she said, I would never do this if I was.
That's the most German experience ever.
Yeah.
I feel like that sums up German culture pretty well.
Yeah. She's like, you should put something else on. Anyway, so it's definitely taken me a bit of time to get the right clothing and stuff sorted out. So I'm comfortable here in the winter, but I love snow sports and I spend a lot of time in the snow. So it was never a big deal. Christmas, you know though. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know what I'm thinking of though. What story specifically? You'd recently moved into the apartment. I think it was probably your first week here. And he was walking around in not a winter coat, but a very warm coat that most of us would wear outside. And he just was sitting on the sofa for 30 minutes in his coat that looks like he's about to walk out the door. And Leticia at some point says, Lachlan, don't hesitate to take off your coat, huh?
It's like it was bothering her. Like if I wasn't going outside, then she didn't want to see me wearing the coat. It was making her uncomfortable. So
yeah.
Were you just really cold in the beginning, everywhere, just because you weren't really used to it, or?
No, I would say the contrary. Because I guess I'd already adjusted. I'd spent a lot of time in the snow. Okay. I was pretty used to the feeling, and I've been camping a lot in the snow. So I've been really cold. I know just what it's like.
I wouldn't even do that. That's crazy.
No.
And so I think I'm reasonably well adjusted. It's just that I hadn't built up my my wardrobe here. So there were a lot of times where I was caught left with, just walking around in shorts or socks or something like this that just didn't look adequate, I think, to the German eye.
And that's what I meant with that summarizes German culture pretty well, because on the one hand, Germans are big on having the proper clothing. We have a piece of clothing for every occasion. There is hiking clothing, there is swim clothing, there's summer clothing, there is biking clothing, there is something for everything. You can't wear just your regular things for everything you do. If you go on a hike, you have to wear your hiking shoes. There's, or even if you just go on a walk, like my parents, and I'm nothing against my parents, they're just pretty typical German in that regard, they would always be like, you can't walk in those shoes. We're going to be walking for at least 2 hours. I'm like, yeah, I walk in these shoes every day. No, you need like proper walking shoes that have the padding and everything. And that's just a very typical German thing. The second thing is, well, also actually going back to that, it's pretty common in the U.S. too to see people walk around in shorts in the winter,
yeah.
Or even flip-flops when there's snow on the ground, which I don't understand that at all. But it's therefore because Germans always dress up properly. That is not a thing that you ever see, really. So you were probably standing out a lot when you were doing that. And then the second thing is that Germans kind of, we don't really have, wie sagt man, keine Hemmung haben?
No reservations.
Yeah, we don't have any reservations, or like we don't hold back with telling other people our opinion on their lives and what we think they should do, which yeah. I don't think is a cool thing about German culture, but you experienced that firsthand there.
Totally. But, I mean, on one hand, it's like Germans don't do small talk, but they'll tell you how they feel. Well, and in some ways, it's like it's not a bad way to start a conversation. Like just over Christmas, a friend of mine and I went to Austria, went snowboarding there and skiing for a week. And I think I was in this hostel for like 10 minutes and I'd just gotten my snowboard out and put it on the rack. I hadn't ridden this thing in like 2 years. It still had all its like storage preparation stuff on it. And this German guy walked up to it and he looked at it and he like ran his finger along the edge. And then the first thing he said to me was like, this edge is not sharp at all. You cannot snowboard on this. And I was like, thanks, mate. Like,
yeah, nobody thanks asked. For telling me.
It's exactly. Yeah. I just needed to know that, right?
Yeah.
But he and I were like, we got talking. He had a split board and like we talked a lot about that. And then we spent like 3 or 4 days in the snow together. So like, okay. You know, it's not always a bad thing. It's just like,
it's the German
observation.
Directness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think the German directness is also just sometimes they don't even mean that in a bad way, because we just do it with each other so much in Germany that like we're used to it. And a lot of Germans actually appreciate comments like that because they grew up with it. So like they kind of take it almost as the other person is caring about me. They take the time to take interest in my clothing or in my health or in my safety or whatever. So but it's definitely a pretty big cultural difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think where like it perhaps can hit a little bit too close to home for maybe some internationals is when it comes to like, I guess when they're trying to make friends or trying to make a connection. I remember like one of my closest Australian friends here, he had a mutual friend from Canada and we used to hang out like when I was here 2 or 3 years ago. And he had all these stories of going on dates. And at the end of the date, he would get like a very clear answer out of the girl he went out with if she was interested in seeing him again or not. And like, I mean, the humorous stories are always the ones that end the most negatively. But yeah, some girls just weren't shy to tell him up front, like, you know, es gefällt mir nicht. I'm not going to, we won't see each other again.
But honestly, like that, I feel like in the... field of dating, I would probably appreciate that. I would probably think that, you know what, that's so much, that might be pretty direct and like unexpected, but that's so much better in my mind than not knowing where you're standing with the person.
Totally. 100%. So, or getting ghosted.
Yeah, yeah, which is like, I don't know how common that is in Australia, but it's definitely very common in the US, especially in this generation. So
super common. There are cowards everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that like all the English speaking cultures have that kind of in common, the politeness and the like not wanting to make the other person uncomfortable compared to European. Well, I mean, British people are also European, but like everyone that I've talked to so far with like British people, New Zealand, Australians, like Americans, I feel like you guys just all have that in common, that you'd rather avoid the confrontation in a lot of cases, just culturally. Whereas like just in the German culture, also even in Italian or Spanish or French culture, that is sometimes a little bit different. And I think Germans are actually at the top there, if you compare those countries, that we kind of like the confrontation almost. So
For sure. One thing I cut you off and we ended up going on another tangent though, but to come back to the question that we originally asked, the whole Christmas topic.
Oh yeah.
You were just about to start talking about Christmas when I changed the topic on you.
Look, the thing about Christmas is, and it definitely ties to that deep cultural heritage that you have here in Europe. The Christmas markets in Germany are world renowned. We hear about them all the time in Australia. We just don't have that. People try to imitate some of that culture in Australia, or they adjust it to try and fit our summer. But it's like sometimes it's just not the same. And it's a bit unfortunate. I was really looking forward to the Christmas markets this year. They didn't work out because of obvious reasons. But when I was here a few years ago, it was unreal. It was like some of the best experiences I had. The first time I tried Glühwein, I was hooked immediately. And I'm it always takes me by surprise but how potent it is. It can definitely like knock you on your ass if you're not keeping track. But a lot of fun, and just the amount of effort that people invest into this type of celebration, it really, really makes it shine. In terms of like how I spent Christmas, this year I went to Austria. So like I didn't even have really a European Christmas, but everything was closed anyhow. And I think everyone in the house was away for that period as well, back with their families. So I'm hoping that next year or this year I can really invest in a European Christmas and have a bit more of the cultural experience.
Cool.
For sure.
I feel like that's a nice note to end the podcast episode on, because we've been going for a little bit, which is normal for a podcast. Everyone who listens knows this. But I don't really think I have another important question, so unless you guys have anything else you want to share.
No, from my side too, I don't have any other further questions. Just thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And I know that you just had an exam today too, so I'm sure you're ready for a good long night of sleep, hopefully.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time after that. Really appreciate it. And this was super, super interesting for me, and I'm sure for everyone who's listening too. So really thank you for sharing your stories and experiences.
No, thank you guys. It's been awesome. And Josh has told me a lot about you, Feli, and about your podcast, and it sounds really interesting. So I'm glad that I got invited to be a part of it. Of course, I would happily, have future conversations. It's been a lot of fun.
Cool. I also hope that everyone enjoyed hearing the Australian accent, because I really like that. We had Antoinette from New Zealand on here one time, and I'm fascinated with the New Zealand accent, because that I can always tell that that's New Zealand.
Cute. That was actually one topic recently that we were talking about, Feli, that you would I think you would find interesting. We were talking about the word flip flops, thongs, and what the Kiwis call them. So for me, it's a flip-flop, 100%. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for you, Lachlan, would you call them thongs or would you call them flip-flops?
No, it would be a thong. If you say flip-flops, people know what you mean, but people would say a thong. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've the Kiwis call them jandals, is that right?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Jandals, yeah.
Why?
And I wish I knew. I don't know why. Yeah.
Interesting. Good to know. See, I didn't know that.
Antoinette, if you're watching this or listening to this, let us know if that's something that you use and if you know the history behind it as well. Because that's a new one.
Mm-hmm. Do Australians call like underwear thongs also thongs then? Is there two different kinds of thongs?
Well, I mean, not all underwear are thongs, but
no, but
all,
I'm saying
all
like,
thongs are underwear for sure.
No, I know.
No, but that's the thing. Not all thongs are underwear.
Oh wait, what?
No, you're right.
Yeah.
Not.
Okay. Yeah.
that G-string thing. Yeah, like we would call it a thong. Yeah.
Okay, I was just curious if the word just has two different meanings then, and if you say like, yeah, I saw my grandma wearing a thong. If you don't know what that meant, then.
I think the important thing here is the plural thongs,
thongs
as opposed
okay.
to thong.
And okay, yeah, there you go. You're right. See,
you're
not
right.
a native
Context
speaker.
Is
I didn't
important.
Think of that. Yeah, I didn't think of that. All right, cool. Well, thanks so much for being on the episode. Again, for everyone who's listening, you already know this, but you can support us by subscribing to our channel on YouTube, by following us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also rate this podcast on Spotify now too, but also on Apple Podcasts. They also let you write a little review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, you can follow us on Instagram. You can also message us on Instagram if you want to. You can, what else am I forgetting? Patreon. Email? And buy me a coffee. Yeah, email. You can email us at understandingtrainstation@gmail.com. Instagram is just understandingtrainstation, pretty easy. And then you can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/understandingtrainstation. There is different tiers that you can support us through, so like a different amount of money that you want to support us with. And then you just get to see some behind the scenes stuff, and you get to talk to us once a month if you want to. On Google Meets is usually where we do that. So we just do like a little video call with everyone. It's usually a big group. And if you want to, you can also just buy us a coffee or a chai latte or a Glühwein or a beer or whatever you want to on buymeacoffee.com/UTS podcast. Unfortunately, I recently found out that they discontinued their support for PayPal. So apparently right now you can only pay on their if you have a credit card that you can use. So that's kind of unfortunate. But if you want to support us another way, just go to Patreon. Yeah. And with that, I would say thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks, Lachlan, for being here. And we will be back in 2 weeks on Thursday.
We will see you guys then.
Cool.
Thank you.
Choose, Lachlan, you can say your favorite German goodbye phrase. Do you have one?
Tschüssi.
Tschüssi. Okay, cool. That works. Tschüss.
Ciao.